tell me your troubles. I will promise not to run away. Why, I hardly know where to begin, she answered. I have found so many unpleasant things. What, for instance? Why, horrid people. I remember that when I lived in X, I sometimes told myself that in the other world I would not be bothered with boarding house landladies and their careless hired girls, but they are just as bad here, even worse. Do you mean to tell me that you live in a boarding house here? Where should I live? You know that I am not rich. Of all the astonishing things I had heard in this land of changes, this was the most astonishing. A boarding house in the invisible world. Surely, I told myself, my observations had been limited. Here was a new discovery. Is the table good in your boarding house? I asked. No, it is worse than at the last one. Are the meals scanty? Yes, scanty and bad, especially the coffee. Will you tell me, I said, my wonder growing, if you really eat 3 meals a day here, as you used to do on Earth? How strangely you talk, she answered, in a sharp tone. I don't find very much difference between this place and the Earth, as you call it, except that I am more uncomfortable here, because everything is so flighty and uncertain. Yes, go on. I never know in the morning who will be sitting next me in the evening. They come and go. And what do you eat? The same old things, meat and potatoes, and pies and puddings. And you still eat these things? Why, yes, don't you? I hardly knew how to reply. Had I told her what my life here really was, she would no more have understood than she would have understood 2 years ago, when we lived in the same city on Earth. Had I told her then what my real mental life was? So I said, I have not much appetite. She looked at me as if she distrusted me in some way, though why I could not say. Are you still interested in philosophy? She asked. Yes. Perhaps that is why I don't get hungry very often. You were always a strange man. I suppose so. But tell me, Mrs. XX, do you never feel a desire to leave all this behind? To leave all what behind? Why, boarding houses and uncongenial people, and meat and potatoes, and pies and puddings, and the shadows of material things in general. What do you mean by the shadows of material things? I mean that these viands and pastries, which you eat and do not enjoy, are not real. They have no real existence. Why? She exclaimed, have you become a Christian Scientist? At this I laughed heartily. Was one who denied the reality of astral food in the astral world a Christian Scientist, because the Christian Scientists denied the reality of material food in the material world? The analogy tickled my fancy. Let me convert you to Christian Science, then, I said. No, sir, was her sharp response. You never succeeded in convincing me that there was any truth in your various fads and philosophies. And now you tell me that the food I eat is not real. I puzzled for a moment, trying to find a way by which the actual facts of her condition could be brought home to the mind of this poor woman. Finally I hit upon the right track. Do you realize, I said, that you are only dreaming? What? She snapped at me. Yes, you are dreaming. All this is a dream, these boarding houses, etc. If that is so, perhaps you would like to wake me up. I certainly should. But you will have to awaken yourself, I fancy. Tell me, what were your ideas about the future life, before you came out here? What do you mean by out here? Why, before you died. But, man, I am not dead. Of course you are not dead. Nobody is dead, but you certainly understand that you have changed your condition. Yes, I have noticed a change, and a change for the worse. Don't you remember your last illness? Yes. And that you passed out? Yes, if you call it that. You know that you have left your body? She looked down at her form, which appeared as usual, even to its rusty black dress rather out of date. But I still have my body, she said. Then you have not missed the other one?
No.
And you don't know where it is? My amazement was growing deeper and deeper. Here was a phenomenon I had not met before. I suppose, she said, that they must have buried my body, if you say I left it, but this one is just the same to me.
Has it always seemed the same?
I asked, remembering my own experiences when I first came out, my difficulty in adjusting the amount of energy I used to the lightness of my new body.
Now you mention it, she said, I do recall having some trouble a year or two ago. I was quite confused for a long time. I think I must have been delirious.
Yes, doubtless you were, I answered. But tell me, Mrs. XX, have you no desire to visit heaven?
Why, I always supposed that I should visit heaven when I died, but, as you see, I am not dead.
Still, I said, I can take you to heaven now, perhaps, if you would like to go.
Are you joking?
Not at all.
Will you come?
Are you certain that I can go there without dying?
But I assure you there are no dead.
As we went slowly along, for I thought it best not to hurry her too swiftly from one condition to another, I drew a word picture of the place we were about to visit, the Orthodox Christian heaven. I described the happy and loving people who stood in the presence of their Savior, in the soft radiance from the central light.
Perhaps, I said, some dwellers in that country see the face of God himself, as they expected to see it when they were on earth. As for myself, I saw only the light, and afterwards the figure of the Christ.
I have often wished to see Christ, said my companion in an awestruck voice.
Do you think that I can really see him?
I think so, if you believe strongly that you will.
And what were they doing in heaven when you were there? She asked.
They were worshipping God, and they were happy.
I want to be happy, she said. I have never been very happy.
The great thing in heaven, I advised, is to love all the others. That is what makes them happy. If they loved the face of God only, it would not be quite heaven, for the joy of God is the joy of union.
Thus, by subtle stages, I led her mind away from astral boarding houses to the ideas of the Orthodox spiritual world, which was probably the only spiritual world which she could understand.
I spoke of the music, yes, church music, if you like to call it that. I created in her wandering and chaotic mind a fixed desire for Sabbath joys and Sabbath peace, and the communion of friends in heaven. But for this gradual preparation she could not have adjusted herself to the conditions of that world. When we stood in the presence of those who worship God with song and praise, she seemed caught up on a wave of enthusiasm, to feel that at last she had come home. I wanted to take leave of her in such a way that she would not come out again to look for me, so I held out my hand in the old way and said goodbye, promising to come again and visit her there, and advising her to stay where she was. I think she will. Heaven has a strong hold on those who yield themselves to its beauty.
Letter 43, A Cloud of Witnesses.
Are you surprised to learn that there is even a greater difference between the beings in this world than between the people of Earth? That is inevitable, for this is a freer world than yours. I should fail in my duty if I did not tell you something of the evil beings out here. Perhaps no one else will ever tell you, and the knowledge is necessary to self-protection. First, I want to say that there is a strong sympathy between the spirits in this world and the spirits in your world.
Yes, they are both spirits, the difference being mainly a difference in garments, one wearing flesh and the other wearing a subtler but nonetheless real body.
Now the good spirits, which may be the spirits of just men made perfect, or those who merely aspire to perfection, are powerfully drawn to those fellow spirits on earth whose ideals are in harmony with their own. The magnetic attraction which exists between human beings is weak compared to that which is possible between beings embodied and beings disembodied. As opposites attract, the very difference in matter is a drawing force. The female is not more attractive to the male than the being of flesh is attractive to the being in the astral. The two do not usually understand each other, neither do man and woman. But the influence is felt, and beings out here understand its source better than you do,
because they generally carry with them the memory of your world, while you have lost the memory of theirs. At no time is the sympathetic power between men and spirits so strong as when men are laboring under some intense emotion, be it love or hate, or anger, or any other excitement. For then the fiery element in man is most active, and spirits are attracted by fire. Here the writing suddenly stopped, the influence passed, to return after a few minutes. You wonder why I went away? It was in order to draw a wide protective circle around us both, for what I have to say to you is something which certain spirits would wish me to leave unsaid. To continue. When man is excited, exalted, or in any way intensified in his emotional life, the spirits draw near to him. That is how conception is possible. That is the secret of inspiration, that is why anger grows with what it feeds upon. And this last is the point which I want to drive home to your consciousness. When you lose your temper, you lose a great deal, among other things the control of yourself, and it is barely possible that another entity may momentarily assume control of you. This subjective world, as I have called it, is full of hateful spirits. They love to stir up strife. Both here and on earth. They enjoy the excitement of anger in others, they are thrilled by the poison of hatred, as certain men revel in morphine, so they revel in all inharmonious passion. Do you see the point and the danger? A small seed of anger in your hearts they feed and inflame by the hatred in their own. It is not necessarily hatred of you as an individual, often they have no personal interest in you, but for the purpose of gratifying their evil. Passion they will attach themselves to you temporarily. Other illustrations are not far to seek. A man who has the habit of anger, even of fault-finding, is certain to be surrounded by evil spirits. I have seen a score of them around a man, thrilling him with their own malignant magnetism, stirring him up again when by reaction he would have cooled down. Sometimes the impersonal interest in mere strife becomes personal. An angry spirit here may find that by attaching himself to a certain man he is sure to get every day a thrill or thrills of angry excitement, as his victim continually loses his temper and storms and rages. This is one of the most terrible misfortunes which can happen to anybody. Carried to its ultimate, it may become obsession, and end in insanity. The same law applies to other unlovely passions, those of lust and avarice. Beware of lust, beware of all sex attraction into which no spiritual or heart element enters. I have seen things that I would not wish to record, either through your hand or any other. Let us take instead a case of avarice. I have seen a miser counting over his gold, have seen the terrible eyes of the spirits which enjoyed the gold through him. For gold has a peculiar influence as a metal, apart from its purchasing power or the associations attached to it. Certain spirits love gold, even as the miser loves it, and with the same acquisitive, astringent passion. As it is one of the heaviest of metals, so its power is a condensed and condensing power. I do not mean by this that you should beware of gold. Get all you can use, for it is useful, but do not gloat over it. One does not attract the avaricious spirits merely by owning the symbols of wealth, houses and lands in stocks and bonds, or even a moderate amount of coin, but I advise you not to hoard coins to gloat over. There are certain jewels, however, whose possession will aid you, for they attract the spirits of power. But you will probably choose your jewels by reason of your affinity with them, and may choose wisely. Now that I have done my duty by warning you against the passions and the passionate spirits of which you should beware, I can go on to speak of other feelings and of other spiritual associates of man. You have met persons who seemed to radiate sunshine, whose very presence in a room made you happier. Have you asked yourself why? The true answer would be that by their lovely disposition they attracted round them a cloud of witnesses as to the joy and the beauty of life. I have myself often basked in the warm rays of a certain loving heart I know upon the earth. I have heard spirits say to one another as they crowded round that person, "It is good to be here. Do you think that any evil thing could happen to him?" A score of loving and sympathetic spirits would strive to give him warning should any evil threaten. Then, too, A joyous heart attracts joyous events. Simplicity, also, and sweet humility, are very attractive to gentle disembodied souls. Except ye be as little children, ye cannot enter in. Have ye not often seen a child enjoying himself with unseen playfellows? You would call them imaginary playfellows, perhaps. They were, perhaps they were not imaginary. To imagine may be to create, or it may be to attract things already created. I have seen the beautiful being itself, more than once, hovering in ecstasy above an earthly creature who was happy. A song of joy, when it comes from a thrilling heart, may attract a host of invisible beings who enjoy it with the singer, for, as I have told you, sound carries from one world to another. Never weep unless you must, to restore lost equilibrium. The weeping spirits, however, are rather harmless because they are weak. Sometimes a storm of tears, when it is past, clears the soul's atmosphere, but, while the weeping is in progress, the atmosphere is thick with weeping spirits. One could almost hear the drip of their tears through the veil of ether if the sobbing earthly one did not make so much noise with his grief. Laugh and the world laughs with you, may be true enough, but when you weep, you do not weep alone. Letter 44, The Kingdom Within. There is one obscure point, which I want to make clear, even though I may be accused of mysticism by those to whom mysticism means only obscurity. I have said that the life of man is both subjective and objective, but principally objective, and that the life of spirits dwelling in subtle matter is both subjective and objective, but principally subjective. Yet I have spoken of going alone or with others to heaven, as a place. I want to explain this. You remember the saying, the kingdom of heaven is within you, that is, subjective. Also, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there will I be in the midst of them. Now, those places in this subtle realm which I have called the Christian heavens are places where two or three thousand, as the case may be, are gathered together in his name, to enjoy the kingdom of heaven within them. The aggregation of souls is objective, that is, the souls exist in time and space. The heaven which they enjoy is subjective, though they may all see the same thing at the same time, as, for instance, the vision of him whom they adore as Redeemer. That is as clear as I can make it. Letter 45, The Game of Make-Belief. One day I met a man in doublet and hose, who announced to me that he was Shakespeare. Now I have become accustomed to such announcements, and they do not surprise me as they did 6 or 8 months ago. Yes, I still keep account of your months, for a purpose of my own. I asked this man what proof he could adduce of his extraordinary claim, and he answered that it needed no proof. That will not go down with me, I said, for I am an old lawyer. Thereupon he laughed, and asked, why did you not join in the game? I am telling you this rather senseless story, because it illustrates an interesting point in regard to our life here. In a former letter I wrote about my meeting with a newly arrived lady, who, finding me dressed in a Roman toga, thought that I might be Caesar, and that I told her we were all actors here. I meant that, like children, we dress up when we want to impress our own imagination, or to relive some scene in the past. This playing of a part is usually quite innocent, though sometimes the very ease with which it is done brings with it the temptation to deception, especially in dealings with the earth people. You see the point I wish to make. The lying spirits, of which the frequenters of seance rooms so often make complaint, are these astral actors, who may even come to take a certain pride in the cleverness of their art. Be not too sure that the spirit who claims to be your deceased grandfather is that estimable old man himself. He may be merely an actor playing a part, for his own entertainment and yours. How is one to tell, you ask? One cannot always tell. I should say, however, that the surest test of all would be the deep and unemotional conviction that the veritable entity was in one's presence. There is an instinct in the human heart, which will never deceive us, if we without fear or bias will yield ourselves to its decision. How often in worldly matters have we all acted against this inner monitor, and been deceived and led astray? If you have an instinctive feeling that a certain invisible or even visible entity is not what it claims to be, it is better to discontinue the conference. If it is the real person, and if he has anything vital to say, he will come again and again, for the so-called dead are often very desirous to communicate with the living. As a rule, though, the play-acting over here is innocent of intent to deceive. Most men desire occasionally to be something, which they are not. The poor man who, for one evening, dresses himself in his best clothes and squanders a week's salary in playing the millionaire is moved by the same impulse, which inspired the man in my story to assert that he was Shakespeare. The woman who always dresses beyond her means is playing the same little game with herself and with the world. All children know the game. They will tell you in a convinced tone that they are Napoleon Bonaparte, or George Washington, and they feel hurt if you scoff. Perhaps my friend with the Shakespearean aspiration was an amateur dramatist when he was on Earth. Had he been a professional dramatist, he would probably have stated his real name, more or less unknown, and followed it by the declaration that he was the well-known so-and-so. There is much pride out here in the accomplishments of the Earth life, especially among those who have recently come out. This lessens with time, and after one has been long here one's interests are likely to be more general. Men and women do not cease to be human merely by crossing the frontier of what you call the invisible world. In fact, the human characteristics are often exaggerated, because the restraints are fewer. There are no penalties inflicted by the community for the personating of one man by another. It is not taken seriously, for to the clearer sight of this world the disguise is too transparent. Letter 46, Heirs of Hermes. There is much sound sense and not a little nonsense talked about adepts and masters, who live and work on the astral plane. Now I am myself living, and sometimes working, on the so-called astral plane, and what I say about the plane is the result of experience and not of theory. I have met adepts, yes, masters here. One of them especially has taught me much, and has guided my footsteps from the first. Do not fear to believe in masters. Masters are men raised to the highest power, and whether they are embodied or disembodied, they work on this plane of life. A master can go in and out at will. No, I am not going to tell the world how they do it. Some who are not masters might try the experiment, and not be able to go back again. Knowledge is power, but there are certain powers which may be dangerous if put in practice without a corresponding degree of wisdom. All human beings have in them the potentiality of mastership. That ought to be an encouragement to men and women who aspire to an intensity of life beyond that of the ordinary. But the attainment of mastership is a steady and generally a slow growth. My teacher here is a master. There are teachers here who are not masters, as there are teachers on earth who have not the rank of professor, but he who is willing to teach what he knows is on the right road. I do not mind saying that my teacher approves of my trying to tell the world something about the life, which follows the change that is called death. If he disapproved, I should bow to his superior wisdom. No, it does not matter what his name is. I have referred to him simply as my teacher, and have told you many things, which he has said and done. Many other things I have not told you, for I can only come occasionally now. After a time I shall probably cease to come altogether. Not that I shall have lost interest in you, but it seems to be the plan that I shall get farther away from the world, to learn things which necessitate for their comprehension a certain loosening of the earthly tie. Later I may return again, for the second time, but I make no promises. I will come if I can, and if it seems wise to come, and if you are in a mood to let me. I do not believe that I shall come through anybody else at least, not to write letters like this. I should probably have to put such another person through the same training process that I put you through, and few even of those who were my friends and associates would trust me to that extent. So, even after I am gone, do not shut the door too tight, in case I should want to come again, for I might have something immensely important to say. But on the other hand, please refrain from calling me, because if you should call me you might draw me away from important work or study somewhere else. I do not say for certain that you could, But it is possible, and when I leave the neighborhood of the earth of my own accord, I do not wish to be drawn back until I am ready to return. A person still upon the earth may call so intensely to a friend who has passed far away from the earth's atmosphere, that that soul will come back too soon in response to the eager cry. Do not forget the dead, unless they are strong enough to be happy without your remembrance, but do not lean too heavily upon them. The Master, of whom I spoke a little while ago, can remain near or far away, as they will. They can respond or not respond, but the ordinary soul is very sensitive to the call of those it loved on earth. I have seen a mother respond eagerly to the tearful prayer of a child, and yet unable to make the lonely one realize her presence. Sometimes the mothers are very sad because they cannot make their presence felt. One time I saw my teacher by his power help a mother to make herself seen and heard by a daughter who was in great trouble. The heart of my teacher is very soft to the sufferings of the world, and though he says that he is not one of the Christs, yet he often seems to work as Christ works. At other times he is all mind. He illustrates the saying about the thrice greatest Hermes Trismegistus, great in body, great in mind, great in heart. I wish I could tell you more about my teacher, but he does not wish to be too well known on earth. He works for the work's sake, and not for reward or praise. He is very fond of children, and one day when I was sitting unseen in the house of a friend of mine on earth, and the little son of the house fell down and hurt himself and wept bitterly, my great teacher, whom I have seen command literally legions of angels, bent down in his tenuous form, which he was then wearing, and soothed and comforted the child. When I asked him about it afterwards, he said that he remembered many childhoods of his own, in other lands, and that he could still feel in memory the sting of physical pain and the shock of a physical fall. He told me that children suffer more than their elders realize, that the bewilderment felt in gradually adjusting to a new and frail and growing body is often the cause of intense suffering. He said that the constant crying of some small babies is caused by their half-discouragement at the Herculean task before them, the task of molding a body through which their spirit can work. He told me a story of one of his former incarnations, before he became a master, and what a hard struggle he had to build a body. He could remember the smallest details of that faraway life. One day his mother punished him for something which he had not really done. And when he denied a supposed wrongful act, she chided him for untruthfulness, not realizing, good woman though she was, the essential truth of the soul to whom she had given form. He told me that from that childish impression, centuries ago, he could date his real battle against injustice, which had helped develop him as a friend and teacher of mankind. Then he went on to speak of the importance of our recovering the memory of our lives, in order that we may see the roads by which our souls have come. As a rule, the great teachers are reticent about their own past, and they only refer to it when some point in their experience can be used to illustrate a principle, and thus help another to grasp the principle. It encourages a groping soul to know that one who has attained a great height has been through the same trials that now perplex him. Letter 47, Only a Song. Will you listen to another song, or chant, or whatever you choose to call it, of that amazing angel whom we know as the beautiful being? Why do you fear to question me? I am the great answerer of questions. Though my answers are often symbols, yet words themselves are only symbols. I have not visited you for a season, for when I am around, you can think of nothing else, and it is well that you should think of those who have trodden the path you are treading. You can pattern your ways on those of others, you can hardly pattern your ways on mine. I am a light in the darkness, my name you do not need to know. A name is a limitation, and I refuse to be limited. In the ancient days of the angels, I refused to enter the forms of my own creation, except to play with them. There is a hint for you, if you like hints. He who is held by his own creations becomes a slave. That is one of the differences between me and men. What earthly father can escape his children? What earthly mother wishes to? But I, I can make a rose to bloom then leave it for another to enjoy. My joy was in the making. It would be dull for me to stay with a rose until its petals fell.